Doug Carroll, saying he was a bit of a Michelangelo man, and I think that you will find that to be true. He is, as I learned in the parking lot waiting for Marco to come to the key, he is a toastmaster, an engineer, a husband, and a friend. Doug Carroll.
Thank you. As I said a moment ago, I'm delighted to be back. And I'm happy to share with you something that I hope doesn't get me run out of town. I want to talk today about how we can start healing the rifts in our body politic. And I call this problem silos of discord. Now, silos of discord are all around us. If we're going to make our country safe from civil strife and even war, we need to tear down these silos. They're silos of ideas, silos of understanding, and worst of all, silos of judgment. They keep us walled in, isolated from those that we don't understand. And if we're going to tear these silos down, we need to start right here in our own communities. And even right here in our own congregations. Now, this is the fun part. We can all see that there's a new silo around conservatives that repels anything that challenges their beliefs. And if we were going to be snarky, we could even say anything that resembles truth. Enjoy that remark. Okay. They get their understanding of the world according to the vitriolic daily rants on Fox News. Thank goodness we're not like them. We are certainly not like them. At least not completely. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that last part because now I'm going to challenge you a little bit. We're not like them completely, but we have a kind of a liberal silo also. It's different. In the conservative silo, information bounces off the outside. In the liberal silo, if we're inside it, there are certain things we can't say or talk about. Now, we've all seen this, right? Somebody says something on Twitter that a lot of people don't agree with, and suddenly there's an angry mob demanding they be fired, tarred and feathered, and burned at the stake, sort of. And actually, it's a little bit like an inquisition. Except that recanting doesn't free you from this inquisition. So the canon law, I think, of the liberal silo is political correctness. Now, we're all Unitarian Universalists, right? What do we think of when we hear doctrine, canon law? Do we like that? No. Somebody in the front rows are going. Okay. So it's right in our principles. We firmly believe that we move closer to truth through understanding and discussion. When I was in Texas, I saw a UU t-shirt that I just loved. I got to get myself one. And it said, I am a Unitarian Universalist. The bedrock of my faith is an unshakable belief that your guess is as good as mine. However, contrary to our open and inquisitive nature, the doctrine of political correctness is the idea that some principles are completely settled and there can be no debate, no discussion, no analysis. Now, sports leagues all have a rule book, right? The NFL has a rule book, the USTA, tennis has a rule book, and the rules are spelled out, everybody understands them. There's no question about the rules. Everybody knows where they stand. But political correctness, we don't have an academy of political correctness that's making the rules that we can all know and abide by. It's constantly changing. Nobody's in charge. Something that was okay to say a year ago, maybe according to political correctness, you can't say now. And so it gets really difficult and it stifles, I think, discussion. So it starts innocently enough. You start off with something like, racism is bad. We all agree with that, right? But now the problem comes if we don't agree on what constitutes racism. Or does a certain act constitute racism? Or how bad is something really? And the problem is a lot of, in the realm of political correctness, somebody decides, and it goes out on Twitter or whatever, that a certain thing was racist. And if you disagree, again, you get flayed. But we need to be able to discuss these things, certainly within ourselves. Now, I have what's my favorite example of political correctness run amok. And I know this is a college town, so I left the keys in the car so that I can escape quickly if needed. But I want to give you an example, cultural appropriation. How many people here have heard of cultural appropriation? A fair number, not everybody. Okay, you guys are going to be really interested in this. Okay, cultural appropriation happens when white college students throw a margarita party and, horror, they wear Mexican hats. Bowdoin College. Cultural appropriation happens when a white female writer stands up at a writing conference, I think it was in Denver, and she says, I think as a white woman, I should be able to write about a protagonist who's not white. Oh, the outcry. Now, if you haven't heard of cultural appropriation before, you might think I'm making this up. How many people think I'm making this up? Oh, I thought you were raising your hand.
No.
Okay. I'm not making this up. It's true. Not only is it true, but my good friend from college, Charlotte, I'll call her Charlotte because that's her name. And anyway, we have discussions about that. She's actually a professor at Bowdoin College. And when I read about this, I called her and I said, Charlotte, isn't this crazy? And she said, no, I think the administration really had good reasons. And like, college kids drinking margaritas and wearing Mexican hats? Well, they weren't showing the proper respect. Okay. We can disagree about that. I'm happy to discuss politely, hear points of view, but personally, I think something like cultural appropriation and the idea that you can't even discuss it is a problem. Now, in the liberal silo, there's a host of issues that are considered scripture, and the faithful will brook no dissent. Genuflect or get out. Again, I'm using the language here. I hope you guys are bristling a little bit at the idea of doctrine and genuflecting. Any wounded Catholics here? Okay. Did that get you? A little bit? Okay. So what's the problem? What happened in this country in the last 2 years? I mean, we're all shaking our heads, right? How did that happen? Why did it happen? How is it possible? Well, I'm convinced that 2 decades, more or less, of the inability of people to reasonably and calmly discuss and articulate their views and respect each other has led to this kind of breakdown. And now, as much as I'd love to solve the problems of the world, somebody said, oh, I saw you're going to solve the problems of the world in your survey. No. But I have the first step, okay? And the first step doesn't even involve talking to conservatives, because frankly, those folks are difficult. But I think, right? Yeah, I mean, you know. But frankly, we need to be able to talk among ourselves respectfully and have different points of view and not burn people at the stake, at least in social media, if they happen to disagree with us. Now, the fact that we haven't been able to do that on the liberal side is the reason that we have conservatives, even nationalists, even neo-Nazis, kind of goose-stepping in lockstep on the right, getting political power. So we need open and honest dialogue among ourselves so that we can compromise respectfully and bring decency and sanity back to government. Compromise is not a dirty word. If you disagree with somebody, but perhaps you can agree to disagree, but still support the liberal side so that the arch-conservatives don't win. Because ultimately, that's where we are now. Who could have thought we have a Republican president, Republican House, and a Republican Senate, given the fact that there's more liberals in the country, right? I mean, the popular vote shows us that. So what we have to do is we have to be willing to compromise and support candidates, even if they don't support every single plank that we think they need to support on the liberal side. Now, those darn coastal liberals, that's us, by the way, but coastal liberals especially howl in protest every time a Midwestern or a Southern national or local candidate who's running as a Democrat is not 100% pro-choice, 100% gay rights, and 100% pro-gun safety. Now, they oppose those candidates. Those candidates do not win primaries, and as a result, in red states, there are virtually no elected Democrats. And I would say this, we've preserved our doctrinal purity at the cost of most of our political power. We don't control the presidency, we don't control either House of Congress, and increasingly, we're losing voice in the judiciary. I wrote this like 6 months ago. How critical is that now? We're losing our voice in the judiciary. The last two judges could not have been confirmed if we had more Democrats in Congress and in the Senate. And actually, part of that also is getting more Democrats in state houses who draw the lines that determine who gets to Congress, right? So now, the Republican Party does the same thing, right? They've drummed all their moderates out of the party for the most part. And a great example of that, how many people are familiar with Mike Castle? A few people. Okay. Well, he was in Delaware politics for a long time. He's a Republican. He was governor for 8 years, reelected 8 years. Delaware is very unusual in the sense that we elect Democrats, Republicans, it almost doesn't matter sometimes. Less so lately, but historically. So somebody who ran as a Republican for governor and did a good job, Delawareans will elect them to the Senate or the Congress. And vice versa, somebody who's a good congressperson can get elected to be governor. So he was governor, he was this representative from Delaware, very respected. I mean, if you watch the Sunday shows and whatnot, he was on as much or more than any other member of the House. He was a moderate, he could bring people together. He got primaried by a woman, nothing wrong with that. First time in politics, a real loony, if I can say that. And he lost to her, right? So they drum people out too, but the point is, we shouldn't do that. In a Democratic Party, moderately conservative candidates who could win statewide or, you know, for national office typically get primaried. And as a result, we don't have many. So personally, I would like every Democratic candidate from the Midwest or the South or anywhere to be 100% pro-choice, 100% pro-gay rights, and 100% pro-gun safety. But that's not realistic, because those people will never get elected. So if they're going to do anything to help change the direction of the country, they first have to get elected. So I would say this, we can't let an impossible perfect be the enemy of a possible good. Electing moderately conservative Democrats in red state would be a good thing. Because they would talk to us. They would talk to their Democratic colleagues. They would caucus together. They might not always vote with the Democratic caucus, but they would be reasonable. There would be a possibility for discussion. Nothing happens or changes overnight, but with time, their positions might evolve, as many people's positions have evolved over the last 10, 15 years on gay rights. They might bring their constituents with them. Now, in red states, we don't have moderately conservative Democrats. Who do we have? Yell it out. Come on, this is a... I should have had a comedian come in and warm you guys up first. We have Tea Party people. We have really, really strongly conservative, even radically conservative people. And they're writing laws that are 100% pro-indentured gestation, 100% pro-gay discrimination, and 100% pro-gun carnage. Now, in my view, moderately conservative senators from, say, states like South Carolina or Utah would be, even if they were 100%, not 100% pro everything I just mentioned, they would still be better than what we have, like, say, Lindsey Graham and Orrin Hatch. And again, I wrote this 6 months ago, right? I mean, now we can really say, oh my God, if we had moderately conservative Democrats in South Carolina and Utah, we wouldn't probably have Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. Okay, so is everybody ready? Here's your call to action. This is the way you're always supposed to end, right? So buckle your seatbelts, here it comes. There are an awful lot of moderately conservative ex-Democrats, liberals, even Republicans who are unsatisfied with the party of Trump. They could join our tent if we made it bigger, but we're pushing them away because we insist on 100% doctrinal purity and we won't even listen to their points of view. And even worse, and I'm sorry if this offends some people here, but I have to say it, if the Democrats, if we had been able to talk to each other and heal the Hillary-Bernie rift, we would not have Trump as a president. In some of the states that Trump won, the margin of victory for Trump was smaller than the number of Bernie Democrats who didn't turn out. Compromise could have avoided the situation we're in right now. And again, to compromise doesn't mean you agree 100% with the other person. It just means that you decide for, if you want to look at it this way, the lesser of two evils. I don't think Hillary was evil. I don't think Bernie was evil. You could just look at it as your second choice. Sometimes when you compromise, you have to accept your second choice for the good overall. So if we're ever going to help move the direction of the country back in the more liberal direction that we support, we need to be able to first talk to each other respectfully. Agree to disagree. Agree some. Compromise some. But we need to listen. And the thing is, everybody has a reason for why they feel a certain way. Their reasons might be good ones, they might be not so good ones, they might be totally fallacious ones. But they have a reason they feel that way. And the only way to have any possibility of getting them to reconsider their views is to first listen to them. So even if you disagree with somebody terribly, the most important thing is to say, I hear you. And then the possibility for discussion is there. Now, our democracy needs individuals with these capabilities. And as I think we are really well situated to lead the charge. Because that's basically what we do as UUs. If you look at our seven principles, and they're going to sound familiar. Oh, first I want to give a quote by John Kennedy. And again, this, I think, blends perfectly with what I'm saying. We are not here to curse the darkness, but to light a candle that can guide us through the darkness to a safe and sure future. So UUs, we can light that candle, showing the way for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Showing the way for a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Toward the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Is this sounding familiar to anybody? Because of who we are, we value the inherent worth and dignity of every person and support the right of conscience in the democratic process. To bring together our communities, our nation, and the world, we need to commit ourselves to listen to other people who disagree with us and to bring our candle into the world, because we have a respect for the interdependence of all creation. My friends, go, listen, share your light.